this session. We are recording this, and I'd like to welcome our online audience. They're all across the U.S. and at several international locations. As I said, so this is being streamed and recorded, and so we would like you guys to use the microphones if you have questions throughout the session, so that way the online audience can hear. And sometimes they'll let me know if it's if you're speaking sort of low, so definitely speak up so they can hear. Also, please make an effort to use the online evaluation, which is online for the session. And I will now introduce our two speakers. We have Jim Russell, who's the Academic Integration Manager for City University of New York, and Dr. Linda Schatzer, the Manager of Organizational Change at City University of New York. And they're going to talk about organizational readiness and change management.
Thank you so much. Thank you all for being here. Thank you to the Edge Your Cause Committee and to the folks who, I guess, didn't have a dinner date, and that's why you're all still here with us or something like that. Indeed, I'm Jim Russell. It's easy to remember us because one of us is Linda and one of us is Jim, and it should be pretty easy to tell the difference, even from the cheap seats in the back. I put the hashtag on the slide at the moment, but I've found out so far that no one's using the hashtags for the sessions. So just the other reminder is that the hashtag for EDUCAUSE for 2012 is #EDU12, and that should get you into the stream of things if you're following along from home. Again, Dr. Linda Schatzer, I pretend to have a master's in public administration. That's about all I need to say about myself, one of those things. We believe this session is here really to help identify methods that we've been using to measure organizational readiness and how those readiness measurements are being used to reach critical decisions. But that's just what we think we're doing. So I'd actually like to take a moment. I'm going to leave the stage. Don't be frightened. This is not a fire drill. It's just one of those things that I do. There's a technique when you lead a session called Agenda on the Fly. And basically what I'm trying to do is find out why you're here, other than you didn't have a date yet or your date is later on in the evening. So this is what we think we're here to talk about, but I want to hear two things from folks. I'm going to come out and chase you if you don't volunteer. Either what you think you would like to get out of this session or what you think I should be speaking about, except for that, with the only other caveat that you should not ask me to do change control, meaning the software release thing. The change management is a different discipline. The words overlap. That's life. This is really about organizational change management. So why are you here? What would you like out?
Hi, my name is Joanne Cuevas, and I'm with Stanford University. My role at Stanford is called Campus Readiness Specialist. And so we work in the central IT organization, and as we roll out new software and upgrades and new systems, we get the campus ready for these upgrades and these systems. And so I want to hear how others are going about their communications process and their change management process. And that's what I'd like to hear.
I mean, something more than just checklists or something like that. I'm going to pick on you next.
Thank you so much. My name is Neil Fish. I work with the California State University System, Channel Islands campus. I know, really, there's no change, there's no money. We just sit around and do nothing. Basically what she was saying, we do a lot of upgrades and updates, and also we have a change management process in place, and I just wanted to see what you guys are working on and if it's any different to based on how we're doing our own and see what we can pick up.
It is indeed one of the things we suspect is the West Coast and the East Coast, the right and the left side, whatever you want to call it, have different approaches. Change management may be a little bit less mature on the East side than on the West side. Something different?
Yeah. My name is Marcus von der Heide. I'm from Europe. I'm specifically from Germany, so not East Coast, not West Coast. But I have a question for you. Maybe you can answer it during your talk, which is how you measure actually the success of organizational change by introducing, for example, CIO structures in comparison if you wouldn't have done that step. So how you measure that afterwards if you have no baseline.
We don't like baselines. Okay, and at the same time, Dr. Schatzer's up there kind of typing away, so we have some idea and record of just how much we've let you down by not answering your questions from the beginning. Any other items that folks are here for that they want to make sure that we talk about? Or you're satisfied if we cover what I thought I was talking about and what others have brought up? Yes, please.
My name is Tim Wema, no East Coast, no West Coast from Africa. I'm interested in your readiness indicators.
Okay. Cool. I'm going to kind of cut it off there. Oh, I know you wanted something. Is it quick? Two words? Three words?
It'd be more than that.
Okay, quick.
All right. Brent Phillips from the University of Colorado at Boulder. So my question is, Midwest. So we have three distinct change initiatives that are coming up very soon here. So my question is, how do we coordinate these different change initiatives and try to track results specific to one when there are so many different change initiatives underway at the same time?
We'll punt and try and come up with an answer to that. We're mostly focused on a single change effort, which is an ERP implementation. However, it's a big change. So let me talk about that briefly. I promise to give this back to our online facilitator instead of stealing her mic. Thank you all for that. So let me tell you briefly about the City University of New York and why we're going through a bit of a change right now. So CUNY, it's really kind of the third largest system. I'm not sure where California fits in the balance right now, but these are kind of what our numbers are looking like. So more than 250,000 students that are in the degree program, lots of campuses. If you are tracking in the aftermath of Sandy, two of those campuses were flooded with water, five of them lost power. They all have power again, but we still can't teach at one of them because it's still a shelter. So we are indeed impacted by Sandy in those regards. What we're doing right now is an ERP implementation of, I'm not going to mention the vendor's name because they're not in the room to hold me to it, but you can imagine going from a 30-year-old legacy system to a modern ERP and the associated changes that are with that. But I'd like to actually pass it back to Dr. Schatzer for a moment to kind of bring us back to what some of the core methodologies and core theories are on change readiness and change management.
All right, thank you. Good afternoon, and I really appreciate all of you who came. I know that we're in competition with a MOOC. Now that I've said it, I can also meet my contractual obligation. Knowing that you have options, we do really appreciate your coming to this session. So we will answer a lot of the questions that you have raised. And what I'd like to begin with is to talk a little bit about what I do. My title, it's very long. It's the Manager of Change and Organizational Readiness. And what I do for CUNY is, as we go through the process of change, I'm asked, is this organization ready to go through a disruption? And what they're asking me is, can people cope? Can a college that has a certain level of revenue be able to sustain that revenue, be able to sustain that enrollment, knowing that they're going to go through that disruption? And so what we'd like to talk about today is this whole idea of how do you know an organization is ready? And it's very, very hard because in an earlier presentation I was attending about hybrid learning, comment was made, you don't really ask them if they're ready, you just move forward. But in an organization where there's tremendous complexity, and that complexity are the people who work for the organization, I think that's really where you really have to step back and try to figure out, is there a language, is there a way that you can communicate and have confidence that what you communicate is solid and that they are ready for change. So what I wanted to start with is just some of the literature, some of the foundations by which organizational change is substantiated and backed up. And the for those of you who work in this field, Lewin is probably not foreign to you. But the concept here is that change is a process. It's not an event. And that what we try to do is move people from a current state to a future state. But the part in the middle, that transition, is the most difficult part. And that's the hardest part to accelerate people through. It's in that part that individuals experience a degree of pain because they're giving up what they do, their day-to-day, their mental models, their the way of operating, and there's just no way to make this painless. But the degree to which you can get them to the desired state, there are a lot of interventions which we'll talk about. Interesting, Lewins did this study in the 1940s where after World War II there were a lot of displaced individuals coming back to a society and trying to adjust to a great many changes in their personal life and their professional life, and he was a psychologist. So the area of change management really cuts across quite a number of disciplines, sociology, psychology, metrics, and it really is focused on the individual and how we move the individual forward. So what we do in addition to that theory is there's one other person that I did want to mention because a lot of what you'll see when we got to the measurements was to try to base this in some credible theory and some credible literature. And Daryl Connor is someone who had in the Managing at the Speed of Change come up with a graph that I think is very good in trying to determine where is your organization. In the prior slide, you saw that we started with the current state, and you get to the future state at some point. But here it is broken down into some further degrees. And these degrees are how individuals actually experience change. When we started with our ERP effort and we were trying to explain what it was, we had to do a lot of contact and awareness. And as part of that, to explain to people that these legacy systems are dying and that the individuals who are supporting them are retiring. And ultimately, we would really not be in a very good situation if we stayed in our current state. So the arguments were persuasive, although people, if they could continue doing what they've done for the next 30 years till they retired, they would be very happy. But we informed them about this, we told them that there would be a period of time that they would learn about the system, and we have in my organization groups that deal with training and communication and a lot of hand-holding to get individuals to move up this curve. After 5 years, we've had some success in that there are some groups that have moved into the top level, which is a commitment level, because they've been learning the new systems and they've been practicing it. But then we have other people who are still in that moving from a preparation to an acceptance phase. And we are currently at our greatest challenge with our students and our campus solutions group, which is the group that's dealing with a transition of all of the legacy systems that deal with student services. And I'd say we're right in this middle stage of trying to get people to a positive perception. It's not a surprise that in higher education, some of the groups that have the greatest desire to keep things as they are people who have academic systems that they have been using for many, many years, and they are not too comfortable about moving into a new environment. But we are taking them through this level of this change. And another way of looking at this, in terms of, again, focusing on who those individuals are and how to get them there, would be this kind of a pathing. In the preparation stage, you'll have people who say, I'll do it, but I'll try to find a way around it. And we have a lot of people who still have their shadow systems and hidden in places in their own colleges where they're trying to work in the background to do the jobs the way they want to do it as opposed to the way they are being asked to do it. Then you have the individuals who we have brought into the fold, and they will do exactly what you tell them to do, but they'll be doing nothing more. And a lot of times these systems may not cover every little detail in a change business process, so colleges really have to figure out what they need to do more. Ultimately, what we want to do is to try to get them to, I'll master it, help make it better, and improve the student experience. But these are adoption curves, and I think this is very consistent with the Lewin and the Connor models that move people from where they are to where you want them to go to. So with this as a background, what we needed to do as an organization is to come up with a way of understanding How do we know change is going on? How do we manage the change? Are there levers? Is there a way that we could grab on to some mechanisms to be able to help the organizations go through this? And as Jim had pointed out in the opening slides, we are very, very large. We have 23 colleges. We have 400,000 students. We have 37,000 employees. It's hard enough to just get one person convinced to move them. But the magnitude really required coming up with these tools. So we're going to share with you some of the tools that we feel have been successful and potentially would be of value for you to use as well. Quote to get you thinking about the way in which we looked upon this, George Bernard Shaw, "The only man I know who behaves sensibly is my tailor. He takes my measurements anew each time he sees me. The rest go on with their old measurements and expect me to fit them." In an organizational change, there is going to be certainly fluidity, and you really need to know what's going on in order to be able to manage it. So what did the university did was we started in 2008 with what we call a community survey, and we repeated it every 2 years. The first survey acted as a baseline that was a mechanism for understanding how the organization should be approached. And then the subsequent ones were done to have points of comparison.
Sorry, I'm going to jump in for a moment and interrupt that because I want to make sure that I think that almost answers the question of what do you do without a baseline. We're creating a baseline with this community survey, and it starts, you'll see that it creates patterns that emerge throughout the rest of it. So I can check off that one question and I'm okay. I'm almost getting like a 33% so far, or 25. Okay, cool. Please.
Yeah, and this survey was done with, we took a very large segment of our population. We hired a group, one of our colleges is called Baruch College, and it was the Baruch survey unit. Their professor, his name is Dr. Alan Kraut, expert in survey research. We're very fortunate that he was going to be the primary investigator for us, and he did this survey in 2008 that began this process. So to give you an idea about the survey, I'm not going to show you every question, but the survey was an online survey distributed to employees that we targeted of who were going to be using this new tool, this new system, and individuals who were going to have to transform the business process. Now, what makes this interesting for those of you who are in the area of strategy and perhaps have attended some other sessions here dealing with change management, the tool here was the technology as the catalyst of change. But we go back to the fact that we are using these tools to transform the business processes of the university. So there's a level of complexity here that really required us to try to go in and figure out from the baseline what's going on. What are we starting with and where do we need to focus? And the challenge with managing change is that you really need to figure out where those levers are so that if you know them, and you can move them, then the organization will be able to weather the storm. The storms are something we're very used to now in New York, but you'll be able to get through it and come to the other side. So let me give you an example of some of the dimensions that were part of the community survey. The first one, customer orientation, really had to do with attitudes towards students. How student-oriented are the individuals who are going to go through this change? And you'll notice that they were very student-oriented, 92%. The yellow is people on the fence, and the red is the area of negativity. The other area is the area of leadership. And I attended a session yesterday that was making a statement that without strong leadership, an organization cannot go through change. Good news here is that it's a little bit more than half. It could be better. But the leadership is at a respectable 66%. And then finally, communications. The area of communications is extremely important when you're going through any large-scale implementation, because people need to understand what is expected of them, as well as they need to be given feedback on what they're doing right and what they need to change. So to drill down a little bit further, these were some examples of the questions that supported that satisfaction of the students. And you'll notice the area that was strong in my work group, we try hard to satisfy, And then it goes down a little bit more to my team and I often work, my colleagues and I often work as a team. And that seemed to be very strong, and we found that that, in fact, became one of the important levers. You'll notice on the right-hand side there is another set of numbers. When we did the survey 2 years out and then in the following 2 years, we looked for trends because it helps us to understand, is improvement going on, are attitudes improving, or are there areas that have gone backwards? And in change management, you could think you're moving forward, and then all of a sudden you get a real resistance in a group, and it's ultimately forces you to go backwards. In the areas of leadership, again, I'm not going to read all these for you, but the colleges, we have presidents at every single college, and the employees are being asked about the level of leadership that was going to take them through this change. And at a very high level, just to take the top question, we wanted to make sure that we had the ability to get support for people to go to training, that presidents wouldn't say, well, no, they've got to be opening the bursar office, they've got to be registering students. But the feeling was that they would have the support if they needed to go to training, that it would be there. And the weakest area you can see here is there always is the feeling that people were not being told everything. And this went through the different layers of management, that somehow people at the very senior level were making decisions, but the people who were the workers were somehow going to be impacted by this, and they didn't know what was going to happen. And through communications, we were able to try to reduce some of that. But the criteria of leadership is extremely important, and there are metrics. You can measure how somebody leads and how somebody follows. And the community survey did that. And finally, the area of communication. We have a communication manager who was hired specifically for this project, and we call the project CUNY First. And he helps in enormous numbers of ways to try to send communications out from the project, but also to make sure that those levels of management, that the senior people are talking to the middle managers, and the middle managers are talking to the clerical staff and whoever is working for them. One of the hardest challenges in a very large-scale implementation is this, is the communication. And if you put tools in place to measure for it, you know where you have your bottlenecks, and you know where you can accelerate going forward. So we were able to bring all of this together develop our baseline. And at this point, the questions that I wanted to ask you is, if given the information that is in a survey like this, and thinking about your organizations, what information do you think the survey could provide you with that would let you know the organization was ready or not ready? Kind of want to just hear from you as well. In the survey, is there anything about the survey that you think would help to give you a sense of whether your organization was ready or not? Make it easy. the survey is again, it's an instrument, it's a tool. And what we did with it is some of the following. What it helped us to do, and again, you can adopt this, and you might think of some other questions after I give you an examples of what we thought about, is we were able to predict where we thought colleges would have the most trouble. And it was really validated because, again, we did the survey a few times, that there were one or two colleges where the numbers were really low for leadership, where the numbers were really low for communication, where the numbers were really low in terms of some of their attitudes regarding change in general. And we knew that we had to put more effort, put more attention to those colleges, as compared to others that might have had the best leadership, the best communication, and their adoption was quite easy compared to some of the others. Also, we use this information to give report cards to the presidents and to say, this is what we found out about your ability to get ready for change. What are your action plans so that you can get through this change? And at CUNY, we also have something called a performance management plan, or PMP, where the presidents meet with the chancellor, and they have to show progress on these PMPs. This action plan became part of that. So the strategic alignment of the president with the chancellor was put into place by having this instrument giving some basis of data to support where that president was in bringing that organization through change. Another question you might ask is there anything for all of this data? I mean, data is interesting, but it's what you get out of it, the information that you can glean that would be really of value. And in this case, in our last survey, we were looking at a particular college where they decided to do their own training. They didn't want to follow the standard program. They said, we know what to do. Don't come near us. You've got to let us do it ourselves. And now we're going to measure whether their execution is better, their execution is the same, or is it worse? Because they decided to do something else. And finally, when you do a year-over-year comparison, sometimes with the ERP, you have the very, very positive attitudes. People are very excited about it. And there's a term which is kind of sad. It's called the Valley of Despair, where people are going up this hill and then they fall into the valley because nothing is the same. The job is harder. There are more work for them. They can't find things. But ultimately, they creep out of this and they go back, we hope, at a more commitment at a higher level. So we look at these trends to kind of set off alarms for us, where we might need to pay more attention or where things are going very well. And in ERPs, what we have found is that the baseline is very important to trigger the inception of launch. But by doing the biannual comparisons, you're able to know how the organization is faring. So I've just presented to you the 50,000-foot measurements, which is a survey, and we can share with you some of the other questions. We are currently having the third survey at the university. But now we'd like to bring you down to another level, which is the second tool that we use called the Change Readiness Index.
Okay, you're mostly still with us. That's a good sign. So again, there's kind of three levels that we were using for this. The survey, which gave us our baseline, gave us some ability to start comparing across campuses and look at some of the early picture. But we needed something a little bit more detailed. Now these slides, as well as actually the Excel spreadsheet that I use for calculating the CRI, is available on the website. Absolutely, I don't know. I don't know if you want to give me credit for it, but you can take a look at it and you can contact me with questions about what's going on there. And so let me go walk you through what's in the Change Readiness Index. What the CRI is really focused on in terms of that stages of commitment were those earlier stages. Is there contact? Is there awareness? What is the perception and is it positive? What degree of understanding do we have? So I've also narrowed down instead of the full range or even outside of this initial chart, what specific portion we're looking at. Tactical tool, a little bit narrower. You can see the steps that I've listed there. We worked with the information from the survey, but we also looked at what happened with our first go-live, and it informed what we needed to investigate for the subsequent go-lives. And it turns out that many of those key concepts are things that we would expect to apply in other projects, not even the ERP, because those themes of leadership, communication, coordination, they end up being critical success factors for any change effort. So what we're starting to see is that pattern emerge. One footnote there is I can measure leadership, I figure. I'm not sure how to measure followship. Okay? This is a unique item in higher education. We might have a great leader, but people may still not follow that leader. And so this is one of those things that I think I'm going to be developing over time. We included multiple aspects, quantitative, qualitative, as well as a staffing ratio when we were trying to assemble this dashboard, this index. And then we shared those results with the campuses first and later with the rest of the project. We wanted the campus or those remote units to be prepared for what it looks like so that they could kind of explain rather than get hijacked or jumped at the last moment with that. First, in a CRI, we developed the questions. We looked for some of those competencies, those success categories. One example of one we had was coordination. We developed a meta question that we were looking for. Really just, do they meet? And it's strange because sometimes when you ask one person that question, you end up getting one answer, and you ask somebody else at the same campus, in the same committee, you get a different answer. We enjoy that kind of thing because that becomes data that we can use. And then we have a literal question. We wanted not just to know whether they meet regularly. That's not specific enough. We wanted a specific example. Were all three areas represented in the last three BARFIT sessions? BARFIT is a lovely CUNY term for bursars, admissions, registrars, financial aid, and IT. Sometimes it includes enrollment management, but it's really the operational cabinet, if you will, of those directors. But CUNY likes to have slightly vulgar terms because we're New Yorkers. I also applied a weighting in each of these areas of how important we started seeing those within the overall score. This gave us our first portion when we asked those questions and about 50 or 60 other questions, all of them detailed in a lovely Excel spreadsheet on the EDUCAUSE website, gave us a score. We assigned the value of 1 to 5 for each of these. We employed weighting within it, and it gave us a chance to start comparing across those units how each of them stood on business ownership, coordination, technical ownership, knowledge management, and leadership. And these were some early cuts of that. I think we found that we refined some of those categories later. We also included a qualitative score. When you have a cognitive psych person with you, or even an IO psych person with you, and you have them participate in the administration of those surveys, you get fascinating results. You get body language incorporated. You get items such as who they chose to provide to us to interview. Sometimes some campuses tried to stack the deck with people who would guess and provide just the right answer, but it became apparent through this process who was stacking the deck and who wasn't. But it becomes a key component to include that qualitative in addition to those quantitative measurements. We also included a staffing evaluation. And this was kind of strange, again, we're a large organization, so we really wanted to count noses. We also wanted to count part-time workers because most of our colleges operate really on the backs of those student workers, slave labor, whatever you want to call it. Specifically, I was looking at the Z-score. So I'm hoping there's no statisticians. Actually, there probably are statisticians in the room because they're the ones who couldn't get a date for dinner. So I do expect them somewhere in here. The Z-score is the number of standard deviations you are away from the norm. Whatever that average is, you start looking at how far away from that average you actually are. And that gave us a staffing ratio that looked kind of like this. You don't see the number or some of the color coding that I have, but that Z-score in the middle, it's slightly red. I'm starting to fall below the average. Now, it's only a third of a standard deviation. That's not too difficult. But we start seeing, when we compare to the other institutions, broader separation, and we want them to either explain that or we need to bring it to their attention so they can address that staffing shortcoming. So the overall becomes this lovely eye test for those of you sitting in the cheap seats in the back. And we see some items. So specifically, Unit 4, look at the staffing ratios. They appear to be way above the norm. It's actually a new school that we just brought on. So we didn't know how many students we were going to have. We were overstaffed at the beginning. You kind of leave them out. I actually left them out of the calculation of the norm. So while there's a number represented there, it's really not applicable. But the ones that turn red in the staffing areas at the bottom, so Unit 7 is pretty far below in terms of the student to staff ratio. That's a community college with more than 20,000 students. It's so hard to get enough staff to do that, but that's part of the explanation there. Unit 3, here's another deviation. The staff ratio is so much smaller, and so that is a problem, and it was a problem when we hit the go live, because that was the school that needed additional resources from the central office to come out and help support the go live just for the staff support in that area. But we were able to support their request for that backup because we had some scores to provide. And you see some of the way the other ones fall out. Those comments at the bottom, those notes, that's where I put things like, I had 24 don't know the answers. That should be affecting your coordination and your communication and even your leadership scores. We're not sure how much yet, so we just put it in this category, so we highlighted it, that your own people don't know what's going on. Anybody have any guesses then? This is going to be a theme. You got the idea. You know that I'm going to give you a cheat sheet afterwards. But does anyone realize what else they might be able to learn from some of those metrics? I'm going to keep moving along because some of us may eventually want dinner. So again, which colleges lacked resources? Were there some units that weren't prepared for the change? We could drill down and say, okay, the registrar's office actually seems to be less prepared when we talk to the staff members. And the methodology, I may not have highlighted that in the slide earlier, we interviewed in this case the only three directors and then six or seven trench or line staff workers, people further down the line. We also interviewed the person on charge on that campus for the implementation. So we were capturing all three layers within that organization of the leadership for the project, the directors, as well as the staff workers. Let me talk about the third tool that we're using, which is focus groups.
Yeah, I just want to, this is like NPR, I have to add something. That dashboard, I go back to a comment I made. The challenge is to figure out what it is you need to measure. And the tools, I did a lot of research and going online and trying to see what did other universities use, I couldn't find what we needed. And so we developed this at CUNY. But what I think I have more confidence in now, because we've done this, we've replicated this across seven different of our colleges, is what we choose to measure. And some of this, it's hard to read, but we measured the ownership level. To what degree are colleges having business ownership? Meaning, if you're using a new business process, you own it. You have a problem, you have to figure it out. An organization that is ill-prepared or not ready would turn around and say, I don't know what to do. You gave me this new tool, I have no idea what you need to do with it. So we try to say, how strong is that organization to own it? Not only business ownership, but also technical ownership. Those are two of the metrics. And the other, we had mentioned before, which was leadership. Again, if the leader has to be there, the leader has to stand up and say, we're going to do this new process. You can't turn back. I know many of you have emotional feelings about what you did for 30 years, but we have to move forward. Leadership is key here as well, and knowledge management and coordination. So not only is the index important for the numbers, it's important that you know what it is you're going to measure. So 50,000 foot, we did the survey. Going down to 20,000 feet then, we are doing this change readiness index, and now Jim will take it down to the lowered level of where we really get down to the individuals in the organization.
If you're following along on Twitter, and I'm hoping you're not, I'm hoping you're actually reading email or trying to finally get a date for dinner, one of the earlier sessions that were happening just prior to this session, there were actually several comments on Twitter that talked about the importance of using focus groups to understand what just happened. Part of it's learning outcomes, but actually within the organization, the use of focus groups is also quite prevalent. So again, typical IO psych methodology, we're following a lot of the standard practices for those focus groups. But where that focus group fits then within your commitment stages is it tries to see if we've got any movement at the top end. Do we have some penetration of commitment? So we were typically coming in 3 months after a go live. We collected those literal comments. We don't record focus groups. We find that that's an intimidating practice. It's a little bit less intimidating to put somebody in the back who's typing away furiously and trying to transcribe what's going on. We actually use two transcribers in each session so we can make sure we're relatively close to the truth. And that's, again, a fairly common practice for a focus group. We ended up then finding the categories and those themes. It turns out that we started expanding some of those original ones in the CRI and adding a few more because we had the information that we needed to put in some other category. We had four sessions on each campus with those focus groups. Yes, it's nice to ask your faculty what's going on. You get different answers from that community. We did talk to the students. We're a student-centric business, or so we say. But actually, one of the times we looked at the focus group methodology the first time, we didn't think of students. We thought we were just going to talk to the people affected by that change, the staff. Wrong. I don't have that little buzzer that says buzz, but that would be an example of how you keep looking at that methodology and make sure you're there. We looked at the staff overall. But we're also looking at a future go-live. So in terms of sequential go-lives or multiple ones, we separated out a financial aid community because we were going live with the student information system first, and following a recommendation, we were going to follow that within 1 year with the financial aid go-live. So that's why we separated them out. It also gives us a little bit of a hint about how they're going to be able to address change again. Are they exhausted already? Are there problems that need to be addressed? Even before I go back to that school and give them a CRI for financial aid, I might see things that I need to address now by using that focus group and separating out that community. There's some numbers. One of the ways of looking at it, we start seeing that there's an awful lot of comments about training. This is the hot topic in any implementation. You need to make sure you're on top of that, collecting those. General comments, and you can read the others, but let's talk about general comments for a moment. That 23% from general comments, so in the lower corner in the red or pink perhaps on your screen, general comments, if you look at this chart, you see dark blue at the bottom. It's a left or second one from the left. Faculty have an awful lot of general comments, okay? That's not a surprise. They're not really part of an administrative process in ARP unless they are also advisors. But generally, they like to give us all sorts of helpful suggestions and ideas. I didn't categorize them. I wanted to place a new category, if you will, because I didn't want to penalize anyone for those items. This is about the GUI. This is about some core business processes, and sometimes I can't even call it a business process when I work with faculty. I have to call it an administrative process. Then they know what to call it, and they don't respond to buzzwords like business. You got the theme already? So we did focus groups. This is what we started learning from the focus groups. One that surprised us was critical defects. We went to one campus with a focus group. We sat down with the students, and every one of them had the same problem. I have no idea how we missed that with our help desk tickets, with everything else, but it became vital that we had those focus groups because we now captured a critical defect in the awarding of financial aid that kept appearing and disappearing over the summer. We started finding how deep and broad the adoption was. Again, remember where we are on that adoption commitment curve? We are starting to be able to see the outcomes and where there are institutions that are saying, yeah, we got this. When we do the focus group, they talk not only about working with the system, but going beyond the core elements of working with it and new business processes. And I can give you more of those details, but you'll find more information describing these focus groups up on the EDUCAUSE website. You just can't do it in 50 minutes. Again, those implications for the future. Is financial aid out of step at one campus, and I'm looking at going live with them next year? We need to know that now, because I might want to drop them from that future go live. Or if I've got another competing project, and we've got them in CUNY, is there a saturation, is there change fatigue, another industry term, at that institution that needs to be addressed before I can add them to the list? And it helps us understand changes and where we need to improve things. That buzzword of training, yeah, maybe we want to bring down the intensity of those comments around training, and maybe we need to look at our methodologies in those areas.
So the summary, and we'd like to hear from you and some of your questions, goes back to some of what you originally had asked us about how do you do with change, how do you measure change? And we had these three instruments, as I said, the survey instruments that give you the pulse, very, very general. I mean, the question about having separate projects, if you know who your stakeholders are, you would do this for that particular stakeholder group. And then you could do these measurements multiple times based upon the different groups, because whoever is impacted are your stakeholders. So you could do a survey. You could then take it down. I was thinking of the analogy of the nested dolls, that the Russian dolls. Take off the larger one, and then you have the middle one, which is the change index, and then the smaller one is the focus groups. And you'll find that by taking multiple tests, you'll be able to then understand the different ways or the different layouts of the organization that might need to have different attention to pull you through the change. Not all measurements yield actionable intervention. You may have your pocket of resistors, but they will be there and managed appropriately. They will not prevent the progression of the project.
5 minutes.
So we have about 5 minutes left, and we certainly want to hear from you and make sure that any questions you have about any of the survey tools or any of our experience of leading this large-scale implementation, we would be very happy to answer.
And actually, for communications, I probably have a half hour I can talk about that, so let's meet afterwards and talk about communications, and I'll hook you up with the communications person who reports to Dr. Schatzer, and we'll give you some clues about where we're going with those initiatives. But other than communications, or even within communications, questions. We have an online question. Somebody out there is still alive and awake, probably a West Coaster.
They're probably having their cocktails and hors d'oeuvres, which I would have liked to have invited to the session, but they wouldn't support me in that.
I think this question goes back to when you were earlier discussing surveys. The person asked, do you use multiple prompts to get the same information or ask the same question with different language? Many seem almost poised to be answered in an affirmative way.
Okay, let me start and then Jim can add to this. Our questions were at different levels. So when we asked questions about leadership, we would ask, does your president lead your organization? Does your president support you? When we went to the change index and we were asking questions regarding leadership, it was more, as Jim was trying to get at, in terms of the followship, are you able to do your job? So we did not repeat the same question. The category might be the same, but we didn't repeat the questions. And sometimes you need to have the same category because you're looking at it in different ways. The only analogy for those of you who have had wonderful medical tests, your doctor might say, well, I need an MRI, but I also need a CAT scan and I need an ultrasound for the same purpose. But the test will reveal different aspects. And that's what we try to get at by using these multiple layers.
I'm going to just also give a shorter answer if it was about just specifically the survey. The answer is yes, we gave a similar question or something we expected to get back to, again, sort of the meta question. Where is your leadership on the scale? We did come to that through a number of types of approaches to that question across the survey. So yeah, it's fairly standard methodology. We still had to be aware of that survey fatigue, which all of us know oh so well. And so we couldn't go too far out in that. We had a lot of turf to cover.
Thank you for your online question.
And he says thank you.
Okay. Any other questions out there? Any other comments? Any other trying to find out what dirty laundry, what mistakes we made? I like talking about the mistakes I made, so any good mistakes you're looking for? Or you want to ply me with drinks afterwards and find out?
Yes, yeah, sure.
You should use a microphone if you at all can. I know. Could you walk that wireless over to her?
Maybe it would be to get the microphone from the desk.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
During this process, did you have many leaders change positions, leave the university? Could you speak a little bit about that and how you dealt with that?
Yeah, we had established at every college what we call as a campus executive, which were individuals who had the accountability for the implementation. Very often these individuals were the vice presidents of finance administration because a lot of the supportive services would report up to them. And for the most part, they acted as influentials and helped us with making sure that all the tasks were completed. For the faculty, we tried to identify different individuals. It seemed to be more credible to have another faculty member who had a lot of clout to speak to the faculty about why they should do their grades differently. I mean, things which you might not think were big deals were a big deal. So we had other individuals who could speak to these administrative sides of the faculty, and we did get faculty involvement in other aspects where we were trying to design for the hiring process for individuals who would be faculty members. Okay. So we did identify leadership with the campus executive, and what I'll put in the generalized category for change, which were key influentials, that if they said it was a good thing, other people would follow.
In terms of turnover, change of those leaders, yes, I mean, organization that large, there will be change. We actually use that as some of our kind of shadowy methods of deciding which wave you were going to be in. We were doing this in implementation waves. So if we had a hint, a suspicion, some sort of evil foreknowledge that there might be a change in some of those leadership positions, we tried to defer them if at all possible. you've got that luxury with waves. There have been other cases where we had to try and put in that change at the same time as there was a change in leadership. That makes it much more difficult, but you kind of need to capture that through one of these survey, one of these measurement methodologies. I didn't bring in one of the charts that I used, which did a survey of kind of the vice chancellor level, who didn't have to give me the details, but just give me a score of 1 to 10, where you think they are. And if they knew something, they gave me a 3. And so I used that just to give them some sort of a metric, some sort of a chart that showed them where people were actually falling out. And they used that to help guide the decision about where to put them and what was going on. It helped us keep informed. There will be change. Find a way to measure it. Find that shadow cabinet, whoever is in charge of knowing those things are happening, and let that influence your timing.
As I check the clock, unfortunately, we're out of time. So Jim and I will stay around to answer any other questions or one-on-ones, but I want to thank you very much for attending our session. A big thank you for the folks in the Bronx who came in to support us from CUNY. We appreciate you being here, too. So thanks very much.